Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome to Spill and Dish, a podcast from the Specialty Food Association. Founded in 1952, SFA is a leading trade association and source of information about the $194 billion specialty food industry. We champion the food producers, retailers, and buyers who are making up the specialty food world. If you want to know more about membership, visit specialtyfood.com. While on the site, check out the Maker Prep course, a 12-step online program that will teach you how to take your specialty food product to the next level. In each podcast episode, we want to share the stories behind the products made and sold by our members who are helping to shape the future of food. You can listen and discover the inspiration, recipe, craft, culture, ingredients, and production methods that help answer the question, what makes specialty food special? I'm today's host, George Hajar, Associate Editor at SFA. We're excited to bring you today's episode and so happy to be working with Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit podcast network covering the world of food, drink, and agriculture, and expanding the way eaters think about food. We're joined today by our guest, Pete Marzik, CEO of Marzik Fine Foods. Based in Denver, the market emphasizes high-quality ingredients sourced locally from family farms and internationally as well. Welcome. We're so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you, George. Happy to be here.
So let's dive right into it. Can you tell us a little bit about how Marzik Fine Foods came to be?
Yeah, it really was the result, the product of a massive fit of despair. I was really frustrated in Denver that I couldn't get all the ingredients that I wanted for a nice meal at one spot. I had to go here for the bread, there for the fish, over here for the produce. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if we could combine those elements in one spot where people could gather and get the food they needed? I was a stockbroker at the time. I was a broker at Merrill Lynch, and I still sell stock. It's just now I sell chicken stock. But it was a product of a couple years of work that my wife and I put in to get to a place where we could get the doors open. And I thought when the work ended, once you got the doors open, what I realized was that's when the work began.
Yeah, definitely. So what are your favorite parts of running the company?
You know, people, you know, on one hand, it's, you know, it's some of the toughest stuff, but it's also the most rewarding. Quick story. We went out to dinner with a former employee of ours last night, and he hasn't been with us for about 6 years, but he spent the first hour of the dinner telling us all the stuff he learned, which was really rewarding. You know, that's super rewarding. We really love our customers. We have a great team. And obviously working with the products we work with, I mean, we work legitimately with absolutely some of the best food in the world. You know, that's our product mix.
Yeah.
And so it's just really wonderful to be able to work with producers and suppliers and, you know, treat Denver to some of the best stuff anywhere in the world.
Yeah, I can imagine how that would be very rewarding.
Yeah.
And being able to sort of accomplish that niche that you needed filled for yourself.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting that you talk about your former employees and that sort of like community network that you've helped to build with both the producers that you work with and the employees that you work with. I know that like community is also at the heart of Marzik's Fine Foods with like a lot of special events that happen throughout the year. How do you feel that like community building helps your business?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's like advertising, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, some of it's working. You just don't know which part.
Yeah.
But the community building, you know, candidly, we started one of our signature event is our Friday night burger nights. Mm-hmm. And we started that in 2002. And it was because we didn't have any business. Like mm-hmm. people weren't shopping at our store. Mm-hmm. They didn't. Mm-hmm. That's when we opened. And we were new and we had this new line of meats. We've had Nyman Ranch meats since we opened. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to figure out a way to get this in people's mouths. Mm-hmm. I knew that if I could do that, I knew that it would kind of be like the gateway drug, right? Even yeah. just ground beef, just a burger that tastes so perfect with salt and pepper,
yeah.
Nothing else. And that was the burger nights are, we'll do, you know, this coming summer, we'll have burger nights where we serve 420 people, you know, mm-hmm. in the space of 2 hours.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it's really amazing. Cooked over live fire. Mm. But our neighbors come in, some of them bring a bottle of wine or a bottle of beer and they sit at our table. Some of them sit on the grass. Some of them sit in their tailgates.
Yeah.
And it's just a thing, you know? And I think it really, you know, it serves as a way to bring people together around food, around an occasion, mm-hmm. outdoors. Mm-hmm. They meet their neighbors. They, you know, it's just, it's a happy fest, you know, yeah. and it puts people in a good mood, mm-hmm. good food, good mood. And, yeah. You know, that's really nice. It's
yeah.
nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, just being a neighborhood market is kind of a community thing. Our neighbors tell us all the time, you know, we're so glad you're in our neighborhood. I can walk here from my house yeah. before you were here. I had to drive, you know? And so that's all very rewarding. And we have mm-hmm. we have a really good community in Denver and we have a great community of employees as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Do you feel the company has like changed, transformed, grown in what ways since you started, both literally and
metaphorically? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've certainly grown mm-hmm. in terms of revenue mm-hmm. and maturity in a mm-hmm. lot of ways. I mean, we do things a lot differently than we did when we opened. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest change has been going from a really precious curated product mix to a really accessible curated product mix. Mm-hmm. I would say that's a big change. And we've just added SKUs through the years. We haven't mm-hmm. added space, so we've added SKUs. We've densified our product mix. I think the other thing, probably the biggest physical change in our business over the years has been that when we first opened, we didn't do any prepared foods. We didn't make sandwiches. Mm-hmm. You know, we were a fresh market. So yeah. fresh meat, fish, poultry, vegetables, other ingredients, and we learned very quickly that that was not going to fly with mm-hmm. our customers. They wanted more convenience-added foods. Mm-hmm. They wanted more preparation done. They wanted to buy sandwiches, and that has become a big part of our business. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the biggest change over time, that, you know, outward change.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting, like, it's a very good idea to listen to what your consumers want as well and sort of respond to them.
The customer is the boss.
Yeah.
So people, it was funny, you know, when I first started, people would say, oh, so you're going to go work for yourself. I'm like, I'll be working for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's really true. I mean, we go to work each day to provide a great experience and great value for our customers and our neighbors. So mm-hmm, mm-hmm. they're our boss. Mm-hmm.
That actually ties into a talk that you had given at the Winter Fancy Food Show. You were talking about when you were sourcing some new SKUs of products, you can know within the first week whether or not a product will succeed based off of like which SKUs people choose. Things like that.
Totally. It's a really good point. And I just gave a little chat on how I buy mm-hmm. here. And that's one of the things I talked about. You know, we know so quickly, you know, I say a week. We give new products usually like 90 days to prove out. And we know in the first 9 days which one, we already know what our reorder is going to look like.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You just know. That's a really important part of our business though, because it's easy to buy and bring things in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like you can hire a bunch of people. It's easy to hire somebody, but it's really hard to fire somebody. You know, yeah. You don't want to. Yeah. And products are that way, right? So, you know, you bring something in, you want it to work, you're invested in it, you've made a deal, you've got a relationship with the distributor or the supplier or the maker, and you don't want to just cut it out, but you only have so much room.
Yeah, of course. That makes sense. So shifting gears a little bit to the goings-on in the specialty food world in general, what are some trends that you see on the horizon for this year?
We're probably the least trendy market mm-hmm. on the planet. Honestly, we're very rooted in traditional, high-quality foods, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't do a lot of fad stuff. However, one of the things we are seeing, we're just seeing a shift to couple things. Fresher, smaller portions, mm-hmm. more plant-based, more sustainable. People are really digging deeper into labels than they ever have mm-hmm. or claims. You know, it's one of the things I like to say, it's like organic, you know, that's almost become ubiquitous. I mean, mm-hmm. you can find an organic anything. I think you could probably find organic Pringles. You yeah. know what I mean? but people are really, there's a shift to quality, and people are trading, you know, with the inflationary environment we've been in, because the cost of food's gone up. So people are trading down in portion size, but they're not trading down in quality, mm-hmm. which we find mm-hmm. that pretty, we're that's our story and we're sticking to it.
Yeah, that makes sense. When sourcing specialty products, what are some qualities that you typically look for? Is it these value-added attributes that you were talking about before?
So we really take a very broad approach to that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to have some shelf appeal. It's got to have a good price point. We have to plausibly get it trialed by our customers. So we have to, you know, if it's a $30 thing, you know, aardvark pate or something like that, we would have a hard time selling that. So mm-hmm. it has to fit. And it's one of those things, it's like meeting someone and you kind of know if you're going to get along or not pretty quickly. Products are kind of like that for us, right? We know if we're going to, we kind of have a good sense if it's going to fit or not mm-hmm. pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. What are your thoughts on private label? Do you feel that private label portfolio can complement the specialty food industry, or do you feel like it poses a potential threat? Or,
well, private label is a really important category for us. We mm-hmm. only have maybe two dozen items that we private label, but there are two dozen best moving items mm-hmm. in the store, and they're mm-hmm. all best in category for mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. But they complement our specialty mix, and candidly, our private label items are of or better quality than anything else we sell. We just buy them in a quantity enough, and we have, you know, negotiated with our producers and co-packers on that, so that we're able to deliver those products, you know, kind of right at the sweet spot value point. Mm-hmm. So they do very well for us. And mm-hmm. I think that other retailers out there that have, you know, enough volume to be able to do that, to do a private label cost effectively, it's absolutely an area to explore mm-hmm. because you know we do our private label olive oil is outsells our olive oil set, and we probably have 25 oils in our set. Mm-hmm. It outsells our set 2-1.
Yeah.
So one product sells double all the others.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's meaningful.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's meaningful.
Yeah, and you had talked about before how people are trading down in some categories to go up in others, and it's nice that like private label offers the option for someone to not sacrifice quality while still being able to trade down price for something.
Yeah,
for something else that they hold more near and dear.
Totally. Like yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So, talking about your position as a retail operator, what skills do you feel are key to working in like the independent retail space?
4 ears and no mouth. You know that old expression, God gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth for mm-hmm. a reason? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be 4 ears and no mouth. Mm-hmm. You just really have to listen. It is hard work. And look, anybody who's listening, who's in retail or especially food retail, you know it's hard work. And, you know, we respect what you all do out there so much, because I don't think the world understands, you know, how early you have to start and how late you have to stay and how much you have to do during the day to just keep the stores looking nice, you know, employees happy, customers happier, you know. It's a challenging business for sure.
Definitely. And so as I had mentioned before, I caught some of your How I Buy talk, and I loved the bit about that kill zone area in the grocery store, like grocery store aisle shelf. Do you have any other like advice for emerging independent, especially operators, about like just going on in the store, things that you may have not known before working in the space?
Yeah, I would say when it comes to like product mix and product selection, don't be afraid to fire products. Mm-hmm. You really have to get to that place where you're getting a blended velocity through your product mix so that everything's moving. And that just takes paying attention. We use a lot of data to do that. The other thing is trust yourself. Mm-hmm. Number one thing I would say is trust yourself. Our first year was a disaster. I hired a bunch of people who were all smarter than me. Mm-hmm. And they legitimately were smarter than me, but they weren't me. Mm-hmm. And so... Mm-hmm. You know, I had a vision, and my wife had a vision that we shared, and we hired a bunch of people who, you know, because we weren't terribly experienced, I had a lot of knowledge, but not much experience. They were able to kind of get us off point, if you will. Mm-hmm. Oh, you can't do that. That'll never work. Oh, you don't know. You don't understand. And we're doing all that stuff now.
Yeah.
But I had to learn that they were wrong about that. They're still smart and good people, but I knew what I wanted. And I would say to anybody, if you're thinking about getting into specialty retail, or if you're in it now and you have a gut feeling about something, trust it. Mm-hmm. Do trust yourself. Mm-hmm. You know the answer. You don't need somebody telling you a different answer because you know the answer. You know, it's so important to trust yourself. I would say that's probably the biggest thing I could say is, you know, go with it. If you believe it, and if it pencils out and you have some customer buy-in, go for it and stick to it, you know. And the other thing is, don't quit too soon on something. We usually give, if we try a program or a new line of products or something, we're always sort of whatever's happening today as a result of what we were doing 6 months ago, not yesterday or 6 days ago, it's 6 months ago. So give stuff about 6 months to marinate before you kill it.
Yeah.
Unless your gut says, it's not going to work. Bad idea. Mm-hmm. It probably is.
That makes sense. And I know that you definitely get sent so many specialty products that you have to sample time and time again, or that you choose whether to strategically, whether or not it works for your brand. What makes some of these brands stand out? Do you feel packaging, the fit for your company? Where is your mind first?
Yeah, so I'll give you a great example. I was thinking about this for last night. I looked at a mustard here yesterday that was in about an 11-inch, very narrow jar. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it and I said, ergonomically for the customer, that's going to be really difficult because by the time they get halfway down, they're going to get a butter knife dirty up the handle.
Yeah.
And in my mustard set, I have to put it on a different shelf because all the mustards are small. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a silly example, but it really comes down to, there's so many factors, right? What does the package look like? Does it have shelf appeal? Is it beautiful? Does it catch your eye? Can you see the product? I remember a pasta I fell in love with a number of years ago, and it was this beautiful Italian pasta, and it had this like box with a window, but it had a door over the window. So it was like a box with a door. And so it would stand on the shelf. You'd have to take it off the shelf, open the door to see the pasta. And I told the guy, he was like, can we just cut the door off? And he got mad at me. He was Italian. He's like, no, this is the thing we put all the time and money and engineering into. This is a beautiful package. I said, I get it, but nobody's going to buy it because I can't see it.
Yeah.
So we try to just think about see it through the eyes of the customer, right? See it through the consumer's eyes, knowing that our customers won't do several things. Mm-hmm. They won't bend. Mm-hmm. They won't reach. Mm-hmm. They won't read. Mm-hmm. They won't ask. And mm-hmm. they won't calculate. So mm-hmm. you have to do all of that for them. And the product has to do half of that, right? Mm-hmm. We can do our job in the store, display it beautifully, make a nice shelf talker. But if that product doesn't speak to someone on the shelf on its own, it probably won't be successful. So the other thing, you know, we want to know from if we always looking for great deals, right? We want to deliver value to our customers. That's our buyer's job, deliver great value to our customers. And so price, promotional pricing, introductory pricing, things like that all help to get trialing, which is what we all want. Mm-hmm. And so it comes down to a bunch of factors, right? And it's not always price. It could be terms. It could be just an easy vendor to work with. Somebody says, hey, look, you know, if you run low, just call me at home and I'll drop a case by. That makes it really easy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Just one more question left in this segment. What has been the biggest surprise about getting involved in the specialty food trade, especially coming from a different industry entirely?
The biggest surprise?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's so easy. Here's the thing. So when I started in the business, there's a newspaper man in our town who, you know, he was kind of man about town. He'd write about things. He was writing about our store before we opened, and he was interviewing me the week before we opened, and he asked me, why did you choose the business of pennies? Mm-hmm. And I looked at him funny because I'd never heard that before. And I went on this long tirade. I hadn't opened my doors yet. And I said, oh no, yeah, we've got this figured out. We can make margin in this thing. We've got this figured out. We didn't break even for 3 years. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, boy, was he right. So the biggest surprise was it is really hard to make money in this business. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, mm-hmm. you know, you can get by, but boy, if you want to make money, yeah, going to tech.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. thank you so much for all this insight that you're providing. We're almost out of time, but before you go, we'd like you to participate in our final segment, Take Five. Five questions for our guest. First, let's pause for a break.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush, green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills, combined with the freshest milk available, created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hello again, and welcome back. I'm George Hajar of SFA, speaking with Pete Marzik of Marzik Fine Foods. Okay, here are your five questions for our final segment, Take Five.
Shoot.
One. What is your favorite thing about the specialty food industry?
The people.
Two, what's one thing that the SFA has made easier for you?
Oh man, one thing. Connections.
If you weren't running a grocery store, what would you be doing?
I don't know. I really don't know. I've been doing it so long now.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Fly fishing, skiing.
All of the above. What's one piece of advice you give a budding food maker or retailer?
Don't quit. Trust yourself.
Mm-hmm. How do you define specialty food?
Oh, that's a funny one.
Mm-hmm.
I define specialty food as the food that you wish you could find everywhere, but it's only in your specialty markets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, curated, special stuff that is better, yeah. More delicious. Deliciouser food.
I love that. Deliciouser food.
Yeah. Deliciouser.
Yeah. Great tagline. A big thanks to Pete Marzik for joining us today. And you can find out more about the show at specialtyfood.com and heritageradionetwork.org. And remember to follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Come back often to get to know the people who are shaping the future of food. Special thanks to Heritage Radio Network, the world's pioneer food radio station. This is Spill and Dish, a Specialty Food Association podcast.
Spill and Dish, a Specialty Food Association podcast, is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.